Blog Talk Radio.
It is Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3, and it's Sunday. We're doing this special Sunday program talking about issues around the world, and today we'll be concentrating on exposing corruption in Liberia. Sit tight, because we're going to be talking to Judge Melvin Johnson about the Cochran Father. We had him on earlier, a couple of weeks ago, giving an introduction into the Cochran file, and this week we're going to have him on again, going more in detail about the Cochran file and about corruption in Liberia. This is Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3. Yeah, this is Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3. It's Sunday. The time now is 2:05. The program runs from 2 to 4 o'clock, so keep that dial tuned in, because we got a great interview for you. We're going to be talking to Judge Melvin Johnson in continuation concerning the Cochran file, exposing corruption in Liberia. And I mean corruption in Liberia up to the governmental level. So sit tight. We got a great show for you. There's Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3. You know it's Sunday, and we want to say thank God for a blessed day. And we hope you all are having a blessed day also. And every day is a miracle. So I'm going to play this song, Every Day is a Miracle, right here on Radio Talk 101.3.
Yeah. To my Father up here.
Talk 101.3, and this is your host, Bismarck. Keep that dial tuned because we got a great show for you. The time now is 2:10. Sorry for that interruption. The number is 929-477-4186, and we're going to be having a discussion today with Judge Melvin Johnson concerning the Cochran Files. So make sure you keep that dial tuned and we're going to have a great show for you. This is Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3. Yeah, keep that dial tuned in, because we're going to be talking about corruption in Liberia, and we're going to be exposing corruption in Liberia right here on Radio Talk 101.3. It's Sunday. Enjoy the music. Keep that dial tuned in. Don't go away, because we've got a great show for you. Song by Peter Cole, LIB recording artist, Wake Up. Very, very prolific song. There's a whole lot going on in Liberia right now, and today's program is concentrated on Liberia, exposing corruption in Liberia, because there's a vast difference in the economic standard of living in Liberia, where 85% of the populace are living, you know, in poverty, and 15% is where the money is rotating, and then another 5%, which is governmental level, where the access of the bucks is really going. So we're going to be discussing it, and we're going to be exposing it. We want to know why there's such an imbalance. We want to know why it's exclusion, not inclusion. This Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3. Like I said, we're going to be talking to Judge Melvin Johnson today concerning the Cochran file exposing corruption in the highest level in Liberia. And if you remember, we had him on a few weeks ago where he gave an introduction into the Cochran file. So today is a continuation. Keep that dial tuned in. And the number is 929-477-4186. You can call in to holler at your boy Bismarck, or you can call in to send a request out to a friend or family, or you can just call in to weigh in on the conversation or, you know, ask Judge Johnson some questions. So keep that dial tuning. It's Bismarck right here on your radio.
be holding on like that, like it's your own. Nah, we gotta change the system, we gotta change the world. Hey, huh, I'm talking about the new generation. I can feel it in the air.
Ooh,
come on, come on.
Are we living in a dangerous world?
Dangerous world. Dangerous world.
Are we living in a dangerous world?
Dangerous world.
Dangerous world.
Hey, I can't believe that America's changing the colors. Red, white, and blue to red, white, blue, gold, green. The colors of the rainbow, if you know what I mean. Yeah, and where's the United Nations in all this situation? Who's gonna stop the slaughter of the Libyan people? You know what I'm saying? And where are the leaders of Africa? You know they can't even solve the problem in Ivory Coast. How they gonna even solve the problem in Libya? It's a serious situation.
I can hear the crowd of people. I can hear the crowd of the world.
What we gonna do? What we gonna do?
Are we living in a dangerous world?
Yeah, like I told you, we're gonna be talking to Judge Melvin Johnson today about the Cochran file. Also, we're gonna be talking to Ms. Ellen Cochran live right here on Radio Talk 101.3. So make sure you keep that dial tuned, and we've got a very interesting program for you here. We're gonna be exposing corruption in Liberia in the highest level. This is Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3.
Yeah, Obama in the timeout. I don't know. It sounds like a clown out. Yeah. It makes me wonder if G. the Bush was around, what would be going on with the crisis around the world right now? Yeah, I know he put child stealer in a lockup. Now there ain't no way he's gonna clock out. Yeah, I wanna say to our Christian and Muslim brothers around the world, just love one another, make a better place for our children for tomorrow. Yeah, you know.
Are we living in a dangerous world?
Dangerous world.
Are we living in a dangerous world?
Dangerous world. Dangerous world.
Yeah, that was a very prolific song by a Liberian recording artist called Sugar Vaughn, the song Dangerous World. We are living in a dangerous world right now with all the crisis going on around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, like we told you, we're going to be having live with us today on the radio, Judge Melvin Johnson. And we're blessed also to have alongside Ms. Ellen Cochran for a continuous discussion on exposing corruption in Liberia, the Cochran file. If you remember, we had Counselor Judge Johnson on a few weeks ago, where he gave an introduction into the Cochran file. So I want to say welcome to Judge Johnson and Ms. Ellen Cochran.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Judge Johnson. Praise the Lord. Thank God for the opportunity to be amongst the living and to dialogue with you, my brother, and our listening audience. I have Ellen Cochran on the phone as well.
Good afternoon, and thank you, and it's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay. Could you please put it a little closer to Ms. Cochran next time? Counselor, Judge Johnson, we know that you and Ms. Cochran have a busy schedule. You're supposed to be in, I think, a couple of states, including D.C. this weekend with the Liberian Independent Initiative Community Town Hall meeting.
Yeah, that is correct. As a consequence of what we have experienced as a people in Liberia over the last going into year nine, the Liberian people have decided that they are tired of the kind of treatment, the kind of degradation, the kind of suffering that we continue to endure. Liberia has been rated as the second poorest country in the world, yet into year nine, we have this president paying certain government officials rents in hotels and apartments. One such official, as an example, the poor Liberian people are paying his rent to the tone of $4,333 a month. $4,333 a month. Even in these United States, anybody that is paying rent at that rate going into year nine is paying an exorbitant amount of rent. Even the mortgage is kind of high. And so these kinds of decisions have led our people to decide that we need to move in another direction. However, we have chosen to do it in a democratic fashion by collecting signatures, presenting them to the Liberian Congress, presenting them to other bodies outside of the country, and we will speak on that shortly so that we can move Liberia in the right direction. As a consequence, also, Liberians in nine cities across the U.S. have called us and requested that we come forth and have these forums with them. During these forums, we bring about awareness as to the reality on the ground. Additionally, the Liberians in these cities have an opportunity to give their input and insight, and then additional signatures are collected. The same activities are going on in Liberia as we speak. Those activities are ongoing, and signatures are also being collected. And so this is indeed a global effort in the interest of Mama Liberia.
So how has the response of the Liberian people been towards this initiative?
The response has been tremendous. As I said, Liberians in nine cities have called on us to come forth and to have these forums. Thousands on the ground have already provided their signatures. I believe the last count we had was close to 15,000 signatures have been collected on the ground. In fact, earlier today in Liberia, there was another press conference where several hundred people gathered, we are told, to announce additional civil society groups joining in the effort to move Mama Liberia forward. This is, let me be clear, this is not an effort that is anti-President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. This is not an effort that is anti-government. This is an effort that is pro-policy, that is pro-principle, and that is devoid of persons and personality. We want Liberia to be run with principles and policies that are consistent with the other developing African countries. When we look at Ghana, we look at Rwanda, we look at others, we applaud their development, their prosperity as a sister country. We appreciate what they are doing. And so we want that kind of leadership that is about principle and not about corruption. We no longer are satisfied with our nation being ranked number one for corruption worldwide.
As you know, corruption has somehow been embedded into the Liberian society, most especially among in the higher level, governmental level. And like I've discussed with other Liberians about eradicating corruption from Liberia, how do you enforce such an action in Liberia, knowing it's like they've said to me, it's part of the Liberian culture, which I don't believe it can be curtailed. But how do you enforce such an enforcement against such a thing that has been embedded into the Liberian society, at the top brass?
Well, my brother, first we start with prayer and fasting. By doing that, we invoke our Creator through our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ to intervene into our affairs. Additionally, we start at the head. You know, it is said in Liberia and Africa that when the head of the fish is rotten, it doesn't matter what you do with the tail or the body of the fish, it will also be rotten. And so once we have submitted ourselves to prayer and fasting, we now look at the head of our country. We make changes there. And then thirdly, we be sure to put in principles and policies that are consistent with the will and desire of a people that choose to prosper and to move further. Those principles and policies have to be above the people and the personalities. Those principles and policies have to be above our individual desires, our families, our friends, and our emotions. And so in that order, when we begin to put forth those kinds of measures, and it's consistent with Rwanda, Ghana, et cetera, those kinds of measures would move Liberia forward. You know, my brother, we are blessed as a people because nothing that we want to do, we would have to reinvent the wheel. Everything that we seek to do has been done already. We merely have to study our other brothers and sister countries and see what they did to bring about success. And we literally mimic those success after having customized it for our individualized nation, and then we're well on our way to success.
Ms. Cochran, you as a Liberian went to Liberia to give your help towards the new government in reviving Liberia after so long a period of war, and from your achievements in the United States and abroad, trying to bring productivity to Liberia. And you, in the instant, got implicated in corruption along with Judge Johnson. How do you see it, and what do you think is the influential power in, you know, that's, you know, encouraging members of government to be so corrupt and don't care what's the repercussion or if there's any at all?
Yeah, my brother, can you hear me okay now?
Can you come just a little closer? No, you can come a little closer there.
Okay, I'll do my best. I think that's an excellent question. I mean, when we think about our country, we are no different than other countries that have been successful in so many different ways. And where does it start? It starts with the leadership. The leadership that in any democratic society that the people elect to serve them. So when we have a leadership that embraces corruption, when we have a leadership that is so embedded in corruption and extracting and extorting the money and the resources from our country without any benefits to over 90-something percent of our people, it makes it nearly impossible to eradicate corruption in such a society. When you talk about this being done at the head of the government, if President Sirleaf is not willing to put in policies that will also hold her and her family members who are part of the government accountable, how can she put in policies that will hold everyone accountable? So because of this, it makes it extremely difficult for her to be accountable, hence the people who work for her, for them to be accountable. One of the things that we have seen very recently has to do with the exercise of the single branch of government, meaning the executive branch of government. Granted, we have three branches. However, when the executive branch is making all the decisions and you've got the judiciary branch as well as the legislative branch essentially just complying with what the executive branch has said, where is there going to be the checks and balances? So when we don't have checks and balances in society, it makes it extremely easy for people to be corrupt. One of the things that we also see today, a very, very recent experience, and I'm talking about over the last 72 to 96 hours, has to do with the policy that we see in so many corrupt, so many corrupt governments where when citizens come up with ways to fight corruption, when they come up with ways to express their freedom of speech, their freedom for financial security and so forth, then you have the
government. Can you come a little closer, Ms. Cochran?
Sure. When you have citizens expressing their need for freedom, their freedom so that their children can go to school, freedom so that they will have financial equality within the society, then you have that same government that is exercising the power of just the executive branch. You have that very government suppressing the people. Very recently, that's what I'm saying, within the last 72 to 96 hours, there was a young student arrested in Liberia who has been part of this democratic. It wasn't just him. It was him and two other young people, University of Liberian students. And part of the questioning, when they were picked up by the police, in fact, the police picked them up around 2:30 in the morning, was that the police wanted to know what affiliation they had to do with this Global Independence Initiative. Why are you picking up our young children and asking them these questions and subjecting them to beating, subjecting them to torture in the middle of the night? If this is truly a democratic society, if this is truly a society where President Sirleaf is not just exercising this thing as a one-branch government, as a single-branch government, then we'll have the freedom as a people so that we can move forward. Corruption will deteriorate. Our people will have more economic and educational freedom. We'll have better health care and so forth. So it really does start at the top. But as a society, though, we're all very much responsible for the actions of our leaders because we have the ability to be able to stand up and to speak up when things are not done right, irrespective of the fact that the government would try to deter us by arresting our young university children in the middle of the night. But when that happens, as a society, let's make sure that we continue to speak up against it. Let's make sure that we stand up for what is right, because if we don't, the government will continue to use such actions that all our children will be in trouble, and the society cannot move forward.
And I listened to a speech from President Sirleaf, and she indicated in her speech that it's not the government's responsibility to afford jobs to every single Liberian, and it's not possible for the government to create these jobs for every single Liberian. So she's asking the private sector to afford their responsibility also within the creation of jobs. But also you spoke about the judiciary branch. Now I feel a lot of problem with the judiciary branch, because even if there's a problem with the executive branch, the judiciary branch should be operational. And
absolutely,
I see bulk of the problem being created right there in the judiciary branch, because they are responsible for investigation, prosecution, and sentencing and all of that. So how can we really make this change, knowing that this pattern of operation has been going on in the judiciary and is still going on right now? I mean, from the top down. I mean, you are a judge.
Well, you're right. One of the things, on paper, we have three branches of government that should be operating, but this president has overreached to the point where she's essentially a dictator in the country. If you recall, in November, December of last year, when we released the first recording on the president on her own ordered pressured and essentially ordered a gag order against the entire country, forbidding the entire country from speaking to us, forbidding the entire country from airing any interview of us and airing any recording. That is not the way the system is supposed to function. The judiciary, as with everybody in life, most of the people in Liberia are driven and influenced by money and power. And because the president has essentially stolen much of our money through the natural resources, the concession agreements, etc., she has now harnessed the majority of the power in the country, and so she is now controlling the country in the direction that she wants it to go. And so even though on paper, in theory, we have a judiciary, an executive branch, and a legislative branch, essentially, we have a dictator in the executive branch that has and continues to control the entire country.
And my brother, let me add to that too. When you say that the statement that the president made, that it's not just government that is responsible for jobs.
Can you get it closer to Ms. Cochran, please?
Yeah, I'm doing my best. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, please.
When you
That's
say
fine.
That the statement she made, that is absolutely right. It is not just the government that is responsible for jobs for our people within any society. So that the government, however, does have the responsibility to open up avenues so that those private citizens who want to open up whether it's small business, medium-sized, large businesses and so forth, they should not have to go through unnecessary red tape. They should not have to go through the headaches that we're all familiar with when they import goods into the port. There should be some sort of provisions made for Liberians who are starting small businesses so that they get better results. They have better benefits with the taxes that they're paying in the country as compared to, say, foreigners who are coming into our country. Unfortunately, that is not the case. We see that we've got so many foreigners coming into our country, and normally that's not a bad thing because it helps to grow the economy. In our case, as Liberians, we don't see that. In fact, these people coming to our country, they continue to treat us as refugees within our very own country. We have Liberians working for all these foreigners for pennies for every day. That's what they're earning, as opposed to them being incorporated into where they have partnerships. What if the Commerce Ministry, the Labor Ministry, the government as a whole in Liberia, what if they were to develop a system that says that in order for a foreigner to own certain business or exercise certain business, Liberians must have a certain percentage in that? That would encourage them so that they can incorporate our people. We're coming out of a war. Our country was set back so many years. In fact, probably decades and decades because of the war. So as we look to recuperate, we cannot just make all the opportunities and afford everything to the foreigners when we have Liberians who are just as intelligent, who are just as eager, so that they can be running the businesses within our country. Because when they do that, we become stakeholders for the country, which means that we have more interest in what is going on in the country. We're not taking the money in bag and taking it to Lebanon. We're not taking the money in bag and taking it to China or taking it to where's the other country that is prevalent in Liberia, India. All these other people that come and just exploit us. They use us. It's as though the government has put the country out there like we're just a prostitute that should be used by foreigners that come into the country when we, in fact, we have diligent Liberians who want to be able to do business. But the government is not interested in that. They rather succumb to the foreigners because they're getting incentives from these people. When these foreign people come in there and exploit our country, they're bringing back some money that they can give to these government officials. We have a Liberian person trying to start business. They don't have bags of money to go give to the government. They barely got enough capital to start the small business. So the government, though the President Sirleaf made that statement, it comes right back. It loops right back in a circle to come right back to what the government is doing and not doing to promote businesses in our country, all because of these very same corrupt practices that encourages the foreigners to come into our country, treat us like refugees, despite the fact that the civil war has been over. We continue to go through an economic war. Hence, we have continued to be economic refugees within our very own country. So the president cannot truly make that statement and think that as citizens we're just going to buy into it. In a regular democratic society, in a society where capital flows among the citizens and so forth, it is a true statement. Unfortunately, in Liberia, it is not a true statement because we are economic and financial refugees in our own country today.
My brother, let me add on to what Ellen Corcoran has just said very eloquently regarding the president's statement. When you look specifically at a country like Ghana, Ghana does not give out their resources, their lands to foreigners the way our president does without mandating some incentives for the citizens. Just in the year 2010 alone, this president gave out over 660,000 hectares of land. My brother, for you and the listening audience, when you visit an Olympic stadium, such as what is going on in Brazil right now with the World Cup, if that stadium has a track and field, the land inside of the track, the space of land inside of the track, which includes the football field and the out of bounds of the football field area, that whole area is 1 hectare. This president signed away over 660,000 hectares just in the year of 2010. Mind you, these lands are signed over for periods of 60 years, 63 years to these foreigners. These lands are given to these foreigners, and they are not required to pay. They have tax incentives that come along with getting these lands. Additionally, these lands being given to these foreigners have exclusive rights for whatever logging that's on the land, whatever carbon minerals they extract from the land. In fact, in the news recently, one of these companies had not planted or done anything that they said they would do with the land, but they got the land and they began to extract the carbon minerals in the soil, and that is another issue in the news in Liberia. And so when she says that the president cannot and should not create all the job opportunities for the country, we agree. But at the same time, don't sell away our country to the foreigners without creating opportunities for us. Use the resources that we have to create opportunities as much as you can. That is what we're asking of the president. We're not saying she should create jobs for everybody. We're saying she should maximize and optimize the usage of our resources to the benefit of the majority of Liberians, not to foreigners, because these foreigners are giving her and her children monies under the table.
Very true, very true, Judge Johnson. You know, it sounds mind-blowing to hear that these things are going on in Liberia. I mean, so broadly, and, you know, there's nothing being done. And, I mean, all those who are, you know, ahead of all these different agencies, all these governmental heads, I mean, are just playing this game among themselves, and the rest of the Liberian people are just on ice. But we'll get back to that. We're going to take a short intermission with music, and we're going to come back to more discussion with Judge Johnson and Ms. Ellen Cochran. So keep that dial tuned in, because you're listening to Radio Talk 101.3. The number is 929-477-4186. It's very interesting. Keep that dial tuned in.
A blood fire there, a large man, you know, the girl, a lord, yeah, the rich.
Well, you're like a star, even from afar, that's just what you are. C'est quelque chose que tu dois savoir.
Understand.
Like a guitar, fit for a zar, like a burning cigar.
She's a sweeter.
Tu es tout un dame et moi.
Yeah, you're listening to Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3, and you're listening to the live interview with Judge Johnson and Ms. Ellen Cochran on the Cochran File. So keep that dial tuned in. We're going to be getting back to the discussion right now. So Judge Johnson and Ms. Cochran, all these things that you are saying, and, you know, about the Liberian government, things that we could do to make things better and to eradicate corruption from Liberia and, you know, bring the inclusion of the rest of the 85% of Liberians. It sounds all good, but how do you prove to the Liberians that you are the real deal and what you say, you mean it? Your word is your bond. Because, you know, they'd be like, oh, they've came, they've said, and they've gone, you know? So how do you educate the Liberians to know that, look, we're here, we mean business, and we want you along to get this working?
Well, my brother, it's very simple. You know, one of the blessings of to a developed country such as the U.S., having school, having lived and worked here, is that you learn so many valuable lessons. One of the lessons that I've learned is what I call the power of the resume. The power of the resume is basically when you are in these United States, you learn immediately and throughout the time you're here that the system here always mandates that whatever job, whatever position you're vying for, that they want to see your resume, they want to know your background, they want to have an idea from whence you've come. Part of the reason they do that is not so that they can be perfectly assured that you will do nothing wrong, that there will be no deviation in what you do and say going forward. They do that because they want to have some idea of who you are, because what you've been doing in the past when nobody was looking is a clear indication of what you're likely to do in the future. And so if people are concerned to say, Just Johnson, what you're saying makes sense, but we've heard people talk before, how can we distinguish you from these other people who have come forth with all of this rhetoric, then I submit to them to turn to the power of the resume. Fortunately, additionally, in the U.S., much of what people do publicly in terms of service to humanity and specifically service to the Liberian public is on the internet. And so people are able to go on the internet, put in my name, Melvin Johnson, and Liberia, and they will see some of the works that God has been doing through me over the years, over the last decade plus, doing those works when this issue obviously had not come up, doing those works when nobody was paying attention, doing work simply because of the passion, the energy, and the wherewithal that God had given me to continue to serve our people. And so that's one of the ways that's relatively easy that people can individually research and be assured that this guy, Just Johnson, is the real deal. This guy, Johnson, is much different than others who have been talking.
Yes, Just Johnson, we hope the Liberians can see that and understand the importance of the time now concerning Liberia. And Ms. Cochran
is in an area, and I think that contributed to the technical problem, but she's falling off the line. She's trying to get back on when she can get in an area where there's reception. We're in the, okay, the Maryland, Virginia, D.C. area for the forum in a couple of hours, and she's having some meetings. I'm having some meetings with different members of the community, and apparently she's in an area where the reception isn't well. So we can continue the discussion. Hopefully she'll join us shortly before we get to the end.
Great. Judge Johnson and Ms. Cochran is going to be in the at the Roland Billiards, 428 East 25th Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21218. And that's the Liberia's Independence Initiative Community Town Hall meeting. It's today at 5 o'clock, so you can join them and get into the discussion there also. But let's get into the Cochran file, Judge Johnson. Looking at the severity of what really transpired in Liberia concerning you and Ms. Cochran in Liberia. Now, we're looking at corruption not just in the ministerial level, but also in the security aspect of the country, where people get locked in, you know, when government wants them or high brass wants them. I mean, it's a serious problem, and it's a serious change that needs to go on in every sector. You know, people say it's far-fetched. Well, how do you encourage the Liberians, and which ways do you show them that it's guaranteed that these things can work?
The way we can have some guarantee that these things would work is for us to have the kind of leadership that leads by example. For instance, there's a man in Liberia called Musa Pelosi. He's a right-hand person of the president. This guy, all the information I have suggests that he has a high school diploma, if he has that, and that otherwise there's no additional formal education. In terms of proven leadership, there's not much that can be documented as far as proven leadership as well. But this guy alone has headed about half a dozen different governmental sectors over the period of time this president has been in office. He has headed all of the airports. He has headed the oil gasoline industry in Liberia. He's headed the sports industry and so forth and so forth. And so this same guy is already a convicted felon in Liberia. He was convicted not too long ago, I believe a couple of years ago, while he was still heading one of the governmental sectors. He was convicted of tax evasion and tax fraud and so forth, and he's a convicted felon. To date, he has not repaid the money. He's not paid the fines. He's not gone to jail to spend one day in jail. And yet, he's, as we speak, he's heading the LFA, the Liberian Football Authority or Association, for the entire nation. And so when you say how can we closely guarantee our people that justice will be there, it has to be leadership by example, and this president has not and is not exhibiting that leadership by example. So given the example that I put forth regarding this president's friend, Musa Pelosi, if she deals with him the way she deals with others under the law, it would give us some assurance that, okay, this guy is very close to the president, though he's a convicted felon, though he's done all these things, but the president, the leadership is leading by example. They're throwing the law at him. They're dealing with him within the confines of the law. I should also add this same guy has been indicted in Liberia. Even though he was indicted, at the time he was indicted, the president issued a statement to him in the presence of the justice minister that she, the president, hired, the justice minister that indicted this guy. The president issued a public statement in the presence of this guy and the justice minister, looking at the justice minister and speaking to this guy, saying, I don't care what anybody says about you. You are a good person. You are strong. You are vindicated. You are favored, essentially, by the president. Clearly, that is undermining the justice minister, who just not too long before that had indicted this guy. Additionally, there's some news that the president has paid a lawyer after the judge in Liberia declared there was no evidence against us, after the U.S. government has declared there's no evidence against us. The president paid a lawyer personally. The reports are she's paid him $500,000 to come after me personally and Ellen Corcoran personally. This lawyer, in one of the interviews, says that even though this Musa Pelosi character has been indicted in Liberia, when the president said, don't worry, Musa Pelosi, you are favored, you are good in my eyes, this lawyer also says that even though he's been indicted, but he's a friend of the government, he's a friendly witness of the government will likely not go after him. And so these are the kinds of things that have happened now over a course of 6-7 years involving this president and one of her friends. And I can give you other examples, but as we talk about how the people can feel confidence in the justice system, how can they feel confidence in the president, we have to have the kind of leadership that leads by examples, even if that example happens to be of a close friend or family member.
Wow. Wow. It just amazes me continuously about what's going on. And with this Musa Pelosi guy in, you know, heading the LFA, and, you know, we've heard stories that, you know, it's the same repetitious thing where government, you know, uses funds to use these individuals' properties for government purposes, and the money circulates right there. Now, here's another story that, you know, I want to bring up to you from Liberia recently. Deputy Speaker replies, Finance Ministry Deputy House Speaker Hans Bachu has described as nonsense the Finance Ministry counter-argument related to a U.S. $5 million allotment for district development. The money was placed in the national budget for district direct district development projects affecting the entire country. Deputy Speaker Bachu had earlier on accused the Ministry of Finance of playing politics with the money, thereby denying rural dwellers the right, you know, to deliver a basic social. I mean, U.S. $5 million is missing, you know, and misappropriated. Now,
well,
Judge Johnson,
that's what we're talking.
Go ahead.
I'm saying that that's precisely what we call the State of the Nation Address. About 6 months ago, when the president now came forward to tell all of us Liberians what is the state of our nation and what is the hope that we can have tomorrow. Millions such as this $5 million recently that is missing had been missing at that time. The president did not address any of those missing monies at that time, but the president chose to address Ellen Corcoran and I in her State of the Nation address, indicating that Liberia could have been developed, the airport could have been developed, if it had not been for Ellen Corcoran and I. Mind you, at that time, we had been out of Liberia for over a year. So this is what we're talking about. Another thing that's interesting to note is during the course of into 9 years now, this president has made over 400 appointments. Rani Samukai, the Minister of Defense, is the only appointment that she's made at a ministerial level that is still in his original position from the beginning. Again, during the course of being in office, this president has made well over 400 appointments. Defense Minister Rani Samukai is the only person appointed at a ministerial level that continues to serve in his position. During the course of her presidency, now into 9 years, we've heard many, many stories of corruption and improprieties and monies missing, such as what you just mentioned. To date, there has not been a single prosecution of one government official, even though she continues to play musical chairs with all these people that are stealing, because she's stealing as well. And so when you're stealing and the people you hire, they're stealing, and all of you know everybody's stealing, you cannot prosecute those who are stealing, because then they will highlight what you are stealing. And so into 9 years, we've had not one successful prosecution of a government official for corruption, but she has made over 400 appointments, and only one person remains in his original position as a minister. That, again, highlights the situation that's going on the ground. That, again, highlights the fact that we need a change of leadership. We need fresh leadership that will lead by example.
Well, that sounds all good, Judge Johnson. And let me ask you a question. From your point of view and Ms. Cochran's point of view, how much will it cost the Liberian government to fully renovate the international Liberian International Airport?
Well, it depends on how comprehensive one wishes to be in terms of renovating the airport. During the very brief period of 3.5 months when Ellen Corcoran, myself, and others served at the airport, we had pushed for what was termed an airport city. The idea of an airport city was not just to repair the runways and repair the potholes, but to put in place another runway, thereby increasing the capacity of the airport to have more airlines fly in and out of the country. But also, the airport city would be a comprehensive plan of hotels, of schools, of shopping districts, of basically an entire community there in the Robertsville-Margibi area. And so that airport city would be self-sufficient. We have the Farrington River right there that we've heard reports that is capable of providing current for that area, and so they would not continue to be in darkness as they are. And so a plan like that, we had been pushing during the very brief period we were there, but when you say how much would it cost to repair and to fix the airport, if we were utilizing the plan of the airport city, that obviously would be more costly than just repairing the potholes. But the monies doesn't have to come from the government. We have enough resources that we can leverage for such monies. All these concession agreements that have been signed by the president, by the way, since 1847, since our official independence until this date, this president has signed more concession agreements than any of the Liberian presidents throughout our entire history. None of these concession agreements are bringing monies into the coffers of the official budget to further the country. And so one of the ways that we can utilize to build an airport city is we can leverage, for instance, the lands that has been given away for palm oil and so forth. Instead of merely giving the land to these foreigners, the government can institute a partnership with these foreigners whereby the government and private entities can be partners together, and the revenues therefrom could be used to repair, to make repairs such as the airports. Additionally, at the signing of such partnership agreement, consistent with Ghana, Rwanda, other countries that are skyrocketing, they usually demand some upfront money, not under the table money, but upfront above the table money that will be used for infrastructure development. Additionally, other countries, when they negotiate with these different airlines to fly into their country, part of the negotiation has embedded in it infrastructure development there at the airport. They tax these different airlines and vendors and so forth at the airport. So there's so many ways that it can be done, but indeed we have to have the kind of leadership that cares about our people, first of all, and that is willing to do the tough job of leading by example.
I mean, Liberia is so underdeveloped, and, you know, people were hoping that a new administration under the leadership of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, you know, being a civilian government, would have spurred the developmental process in Liberia. But, you know, when you look at Sierra Leone that went through war just as Liberia, the developmental process is booming in Sierra Leone compared to that of Liberia. And speaking of the airport, I mean, we should have, we're in the 21st century, I mean, where we have, you know, these international airports, I mean, all these countries, even the Ivory Coast, you know, airport up to standard. I mean, why are we, I mean, we know because of the corruption and all of that, but how can we divert the monetary funds from for all these projects away from this, these government officials, you know, and let them deal with the theoretical aspect of it so that we can make sure the monetary aspect goes to exactly what is intended for?
My brother, it cannot be done while this president is in office, because the president herself is doing what these officials are doing, and the officials know that the president is doing what they are doing. So the officials have some sense of comfort that because the president is doing what they are doing, the president is not able to take anything from them, to enforce anything, or to prosecute them. So they feel as though they have a carte blanche to continue to do what they do because the president is doing the same thing. And so it, as much as it is sickening, and it sounds sickening, what it does, it creates sort of a competition of who can steal the most, who can plunder the country the most. And instead of there being a competition of who can work the hardest, who can work the smartest, who can work the most proficient and efficient and effective for the country, it now has turned into a race of who can steal the most within the limited time that they have. And so nobody is focused in the government and the corruption clique, as they are so-called in Liberia. They're not focused on the development. They're not focused on the interest of the people. They're focusing on how much they can steal and how quickly they can get these monies out of the country. Again, this is why after 8 years into 9 years, nine and a half years now, or 9 years we're into, these government officials are not even encouraged by the president to build houses in Liberia. The president herself has not built a house since she's been in office. She merely refurbished a small flat that she lives in. She has not made any repairs to the government. There was a news story that was out not too long ago where, in addition to the government using the budget to pay hotels and apartment rents for government officials who are not encouraged to build houses, that government ministries are being housed in buildings owned by these corruption clique officials and others, and the government is paying rent to them for these government ministries. The report came out that $1.5 million paid for LTA, Liberia Telecommunication Authority, annually. $700,000 was being paid for the Liberia Revenue Authority annually in rent. And so you've got now the government officials, the country, the poor people are paying the rent. You have the ministries, the poor people are paying the rent, and these people are plundering whatever else is left. If we as a people don't do something now, if the international community that love us and care for us don't do something now, nothing will be left if we allow this woman to continue the way she has been continuing. My brother, if you take the entire land area of Liberia, if Liberia was a diplomat that we often put on the table to eat or on top of, if you take the land area of Liberia, 40% of the whole country has already been given away in concession agreements. 40% of the whole country has already been given away in concession agreements. If you take Liberia again and you look at the areas that have forests and have the trees that are used for logging, that area, over 60%, now approaching 70%+ of that area that has forests and logging has already been given away. So if we continue to allow this kind of leadership to go further, I'm afraid at the end of her regime, it may be that 75% of the whole country would have been sold off. It may be that 100% of all the logins would have been sold off to foreigners, and we may become slaves, refugees, those kinds of things in our own country, because there will be nothing left for us or our children to develop and to go back to.
I mean, this is very serious, you know, the depletion of the rainforest and all of that, you know, no replanting. I mean, we're cutting down but not replanting and all of that. I mean, giving out, selling out the country to foreigners. I mean, look at the financial institutions of Liberia now in the hands of foreigners and those who we know of. But let me ask you this direct question. Do you think this is being influenced or encouraged by our international brothers?
Well, when you say international brothers, there are different international people that have different kinds of interest in Liberia. Some of the people, their interest is to take from Liberia. They don't necessarily care about Liberians. They are business people that are looking to make money. And so if they come to Liberia, they feel that if our leadership is foolish enough to give them crazy deals to make money, they will take it. I think that's how it is with much of the foreigners that are in Liberia. But the problem is not the foreigners. If we have a saying in Liberia that if your house doesn't sell you, than the street want by you. In this case, if our leader doesn't sell us, then the foreigners want by us. These foreigners are coming from Asia. These foreigners are coming from countries like Malaysia. They're coming from Lebanon and India. That's a very long ways to get to Liberia. The only way they are coming, the only way they feel encouraged to come is because they know that when they come, they can make a whole lot more money off of this country than they can anywhere else. And they know that the leadership is encouraging and willing to allow them to plunder, and so they're coming to plunder. These are not people that are coming for emotional reasons. These are not people that are coming for to bring us the gospel. These are not missionaries. These are people who will tell you the only reason they're there is to amass wealth and to amass money. And so if we have a leadership that don't love us, don't care for us, will allow them to do so, they will continue to do so.
And this is seriously disturbing, you know. This is seriously disturbing. So, you know, mostly people say that, you know, Monrovia is Liberia because everything is centered in Monrovia. You know, Monrovia now is overpopulated. And you have the percentage of government officials who are living high above their means or their, you know, their daily needs. And the rest of the populace in dire need, you know, living way below the $2 margin per day. Looking at this statistic right here, you know, Woba Town, about 176 miles away from Monrovia, is located deep in the forest of Moa District, Riverside County. This small-sized settlement is home for approximately 2,500 inhabitants without water, school, no health care, nothing. I mean, what is the present government doing, centering their productivity only within the vicinity of Monrovia? What's happening to the rest of the counties?
Well, my brother, the situation is just—it's almost unspeakable. It's inhumane. This is why I say so. Relatively speaking, Monrovia is the only part of the country that is developed. Relatively speaking, Monrovia is the only part of the country that has the most opportunities. And so areas such as what you mentioned, they're already underdeveloped. They already don't have opportunities. They already don't have any form of electricity. They don't have any roads. They don't have any hospitals, no medicine, no schools, etc. The reason, additionally, I say that this leadership has been inhumane is all of these concession agreements that we're talking about, these concession agreements, when they're handed out to these foreigners, do you know that these foreigners basically get to choose what lands they want? And whatever lands they want, the government now puts pressure on these people to relocate to another area. And so what is happening, when I said it's inhumane, these people are poorest in the country. Liberia was rated second poorest in the world. So the nation as a whole is rated second poorest, and these people in the second poorest country in the world are the poorest of the poorest. And then when they are able to brush an area to build their huts, to be able to farm a little and hunt and whatnot to survive, then you have the government giving away their land, their birthrights, the land that their fathers left them. The government signs it away in Monrovia with these foreigners. The foreigner gives them bags of money under the table. And one day, while these people are there on their lands trying to survive, these foreigners show up and say, hey, the government has given us the deed title to this land. You have to move. And so it's unthinkable. So not only is there no plan to take development to the poorest of the poorest of the poorest country on earth, but now these people are being relocated left and right with no provision given them.
This is sad. This is sad. Now, Judge Johnson, do you see it feasible that the Liberian International Airport can be rebuilt or renovated?
It is absolutely feasible that it can be rebuilt and renovated. Just the monies that are raised in revenues from the vendors, such as Delta Airlines, from the vendors that do different services and products there at the airport, just the monies that are raised from those people, that money is sufficient to begin the systematic renovation of the airport. But when those monies are raised, first of all, those monies are never raised to their fullest capacity because of the different corruption and stealing and plundering that is sanctioned by the president and her corruption clique. And then even the monies that are in fact raised, they're not used for development. They go right back into the pockets of the people. For instance, when we were at the airport, we noticed that these government officials had this phenomenon called ghost employees. In essence, if in reality 10 people worked at the airport, they would put on the payroll that there were 35 people. When they get the monies from the budget, they would pay the 10 people, and the monies for the 25 people who were ghost people would go into their pockets. That's money that could be used to renovate and rehabilitate the airport. This is not just Jeff Johnson and Ellen Corcoran saying it. The United States government, through USAID, did a review of the Liberian government. When they reviewed one ministry, they found within that ministry that there were over 9,000 ghost employees. One ministry had over 9,000 ghost employees. What that means, my brother and your listening audience, is every month, which the president is now into year nine, she's halfway into year nine, but every month for the last nine plus years now, every month some government official, this is just one ministry, is collecting, cashing them, and putting them in their pockets.
And that money could be allocated for something else.
Absolutely. When you look at the recent photos, of course, we're in the midst of the rain and so forth going on in Liberia. When you look at the feces, the trash that are all over the place, there are reports of different communities, entire communities having to flee the flood because the waters are rising, the drainage systems are clogged, there's no infrastructure, public works is virtually doing nothing to help this problem. And then you think about just one ministry where you have government officials every month cashing 9,000 plus bogus checks.
Yeah. Wow.
There's no way the country can move forward like that. We have to change the lead. There's no way we can move forward. Now, in any country under the earth where there are red-blooded human beings, especially a red-blooded human being as a president and cares about the nation, if such a report comes out that shows just one ministry every month 9,000 false checks are being cashed, somebody would have been arrested, somebody would have gone to jail, there would have been a trial and so forth. After the report was made, it went through, the president said nothing, she did nothing, and that's the end of it. Just like all the other reports we're hearing, all the other proven stuff we're hearing, you just mentioned the $5 million, which is now a current event. These things come about, again, because her friends, people in the corruption clique are stealing. They know each other. Those people know what she's stealing. She's now aware of what they're stealing. So when you've got two rogues, nobody's going to call the other person a rogue because then everybody will be exposed. This is precisely what's happening.
Wow. I mean, and it continues and continues and continues. So now we got a serious problem here. Looking at the oil industry now in Liberia, where Liberians are hoping to, you know, have a lot of money come into Liberia from the oil sector, you know, to benefit a lot of Liberians. Do you see these contracts that have been signed by the Liberian government as good contracts?
My brother, I have not personally seen the contracts, but this is what I do know that is interesting. We as a people are being told that there isn't any oil there yet, that they're merely doing exploration, meaning they're checking to see if there is oil. If you are checking to see if there is oil, why are you signing a contract to give away the oil? If you're checking, then it means you know there is oil. You want to verify there is oil. Then there is not a need to sign away the oil that you don't know is there.
Right.
So if you're doing exploration, then you shouldn't sign any contracts. The only time you sign contracts is because you know there is something in the earth that you're going to reap. The only people that have benefited from the oil that obviously exists, because if there was no oil, there wouldn't be any contracts. The only people that have benefited has been this president and her family. The guy who was part of the head of the oil bureau, NOCAL, Prince Nayef, one of the things he pointed out recently when he came public with some of the information against the president and the government, one of the things that he pointed out is that even concessions, meaning people who provide food and water for the people working on the oil rigs, know, my brother and your listening audience, the people that go out and take food and send water to the people working on the oil rigs are not even Liberians. Those people that are Ghanaians. I'm not even talking about the people who are drilling the oil. I'm not even talking about the fact that we don't have any refinery that takes our oil and turns it into gas.
Liberians themselves are not even given the chance. Judge Johnson, we have a caller on the line, area code 804. Can you introduce yourself? I think he wants to ask a question or so.
Yes, Judge Johnson, how are you doing?
I'm fine, my brother. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. I've been listening to, by the way, I'm Jim Cassell. Nice meeting you.
Likewise, brother.
I've been listening to some of your arguments, and I have a little problem with it. I'm not a very big fan of Mrs. Johnson.
I don't know if the host can hear you, but your phone is breaking up. I've
been listening to your arguments, and even though I'm not a very big fan of Mrs. Salus, but I have a problem with both you and Chris Nayef. Chris came out the other day. He talked about the situation, commissary, like you was talking about with the Ghanaians, and you came about and talking about all these ghost employees in different organizations and ministries. You were part of that organization. Why didn't you speak against it? Why you were part of the organization? You only speaking against it after you were kicked out of the, you may have all, you may be a very honest person in everything you say, but I have a problem with it because you're either with it or you're against it. If you were
let me answer you directly. I think the question you're asking is a good question. I think that you perhaps have not followed the story from the beginning. Let me summarize it from you and give you some timelines. I went to Liberia. I was hired to work as the legal advisor at the airport by the 7 members on the board of directors October of 2012. Ellen Corcoran also started about a week before I started as well. When we noticed all these things going on, we were faced with a decision to either leave Liberia and give up, say nothing, which would be basically going along with the crowd, or to do something different, to do something revolutionary that would have an impact on Liberia going forward. That was the point where we made the decision to record the president and all these corrupt officials, not to record them in their private affairs to expose and embarrass them privately, but in dealing with the public monies.
As in the interest of the Liberian people.
Absolutely. As a consequence of our actions, the president found out there was an order issued for us to be captured at night under cover of darkness by the very grace of God, the very people that were given that order, the person who's in charge of policing the whole country. The director of police told us that the president had had a meeting in which she directed him, she directed the NSA person, the immigration, all these top security brass, that we must be captured. He confessed that to us. He, along with some other people, helped us to leave. We left at around January, early February of 2013. 6 months, my brother, 6 months after we left Liberia, then the government came out with an indictment. While we were still in Liberia in January of 2013, just as I'm now speaking on these airways, we had a press conference in Liberia. There's a radio station called Fabric Radio in Sincor. At that press conference, we also played some of these recordings that you hear about now. We played those recordings there in Liberia while we were still in Liberia, while we were working in Liberia. In fact, it is because we played those recordings that made it clear to the president and the corrupt government officials that we were recording corruption in Liberia, and that's what led to our lives being at risk. That's what led to the president ordering us to be captured and, I believe, killed, and so that's what led to us fleeing Liberia. And after we fled with just the clothes on our backs, 6 months after we left, 6 months is when they came up with the indictment. And so the point, your question is well understood, but the timeline, I think, needs to be understood. So I am just not now speaking against corruption because I've left. I spoke against corruption while I was there. We had a press conference while we were there. We played the recordings while we were there. But we don't have guns. We don't have the ammunition. We don't have the military. And so when the president now raises the guns against you and say, capture these people, and in essence, kill them to quiet them, then you have to take precaution. You have to take safety. So, again, we're not just speaking after we left while in Liberia. We played the recordings while in Liberia. We recorded them to expose them while in Liberia. And, of course, now that we're in exile, though we're in exile temporarily, we continue that effort for the sake of the people. My brother, lastly, I want to say to you that Almighty God has blessed Ellen Corcoran and I. We don't need to go around the country to do what we are doing. This adds nothing to us. In fact, it creates a tremendous financial burden on us. But as Liberians, we determined way back in 2012 that somebody needed to step up to the plate to be the sacrificial lamb for Liberia, to bring about awareness, to bring about change. Because of the direction we saw our country going in, we decided to God be the glory. We will take that stance. And what you're hearing at this moment is a continuation of that stance that we took, which included recording the president, recording all these officials, having the press conference in Liberia. All the things we've done until this moment is consistent with that position that we took, that somebody has to stand up, Mama Liberia. Somebody has to speak for those poor people who are unable to speak. Somebody has to take action for those people who are unable to take action because of the suffering, the stealing that is going on in Liberia. That is the truth, my brother.
Judge Johnson, I appreciate that. And like I said, I have to applaud you because the reason I was saying this is because Chris, who came from the National Oil Company, I know he did a couple of, running things with Robert Salif that he had, recorded, and he even wrote letters, and, he had made attachment to the United Nations and different unions, which you're very much aware of, United States government. And in other words, if anything does happen to me, this is what's going on. And I was just concerned because, I'm glad you kind of, brought me back into the loop as to what was going on with you guys, because all I heard was these two folks got fired from the airport because of $250,000 getting, misappropriated or something like that. But I'm kind of glad you clarified things for me, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely, my brother. I want to urge you to stay informed with what's going on. I don't know what city you live in, but
I live in Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, well, you should come to the forum. We have a forum today in the
Virginia. I'm 2 hours away from you, my brother.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
I'm 2 hours. Okay. You're kind of Northern Virginia. I'm Central Virginia.
I see. Well, I thank you for your participation in calling. I thank you for your interest. This is what we need as a people. After we have collected these signatures in the diaspora, after we have collected these signatures in Liberia, we are going to present these signatures to the White House. We're going to present it to the United Nations. We're going to present it to Harvard University, the ECOWAS embassies here in the U.S., and other bodies. At that time, we will be looking for Liberians who are willing to volunteer and be part of these teams to present these signatures. Our message to all of these bodies, including President Barack Obama, is that Liberian people have spoken through their signatures. They have expressed their position that want a change in leadership. They no longer want to be the second poorest country in the world. They no longer want to be the number one country for corruption. They no longer are comfortable with over 40% of the entire country already bent mortgage away in concession agreements. They're no longer comfortable with over 60% of the remaining rainforests already been mortgaged. They want something different, but they are expressing it in a democratic fashion. So even if you're not able to be a part of any of these forums, when that time comes, when the announcement is made, whatever group, whatever destination the group is heading that you can be a part of, my brother, I want to encourage you to do so. This is an effort that will take all of Liberians in Liberia and in the diaspora working with one energy and one mindset, and that energy and mindset is focused on liberating Mama Liberia.
Judge Johnson, my brother, please hold on the line there. Don't go away, please. We got another caller, Morris Kamara. He wants to ask you a question to Judge Johnson. Go ahead, Mr. Kamara.
Yeah, I can. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Achan, this is your Uncle Morris. How you doing?
Long time, Uncle Morris. My respect to you. How are you?
How you doing, my man? Are you good to hear your voice, man? Good to hear you. How you doing, my
thank
man?
Thank you.
Doing,
thank
man?
You. Good to hear your voice as well. I'm well.
Yeah. But listen, man, you mentioned about Brandon Sabankai being the only minister that is within Ellen government since he took over.
Yeah.
And I have known Mr. Sabankai personally. I know him very, he's a very personal friend of mine. And I know him to be very very qualified for the job he's doing and so on and so forth. And so I think Mr. Sabankai is one of the best ministers we've had since my days. But my question is, there are other ministers. Like, for instance, the finance minister. I don't know. I've been reading an article about him, and I don't know if really he being qualification, but some people telling me he wouldn't be something like computer codes or whatever. But, I mean, for a man like that, why is he so powerful within the Ellen government? Can you tell me why he's so powerful or anything? Do you have any idea why he's so powerful? Because he makes budget and he makes estimates of something that he knows nothing about, you know, come to find out.
Yes. You know, my uncle, first regarding Brani Sabankai, when I mentioned that he's the only minister still in his position that the president, since being in office, has made well over 400 appointments, I think that's a tribute to Brani Sabankai to show the consistency that he has exhibited in his position in order to continue to be in that position.
Right.
Additionally, I am indebted to Minister Sabankai because he was one of the people that brought forth revelations that end up saving my life. Even though I was put in a position that in an effort to expose the corruption as a whole, that he also had to be included because he's working for the government. And so I have much appreciation, I have much affinity for Defense Minister Brandon Samukai. Now, on to Amara Kone, the finance minister. According to all the records that is out there publicly, he did computer study in school, so he didn't do finance. He does have a finance degree. Nevertheless, he's the one making and setting the financial policy for our country.
Right.
To add insult to injury, he's the one who was highlighted in a report that came out that showed halfway into year nine that he is still living in hotels in Liberia at the expense of the Liberian people. He's the one who we are paying his monthly hotel rent of $4,333 a month. $4,333 a month.
Amazing.
Even if he wasn't the finance minister, any minister should know that that is bad financial policy, especially the finance minister. Now, when you ask why is it that his rent is being paid, why is he so powerful, why is he so influential, I will tell you this. While we were in Liberia gathering these recordings to expose the corruption, Musa Filithi, who I mentioned earlier, calls Amara Kone the prime minister. He says Amara Kone is the president's son. He explained to me that Amara Kone has had a relationship with the president for a long time, and so he's the de facto prime minister in Liberia. Mr. Massaquai, when we had discussions with him, he also made it very clear that Amara Kone was corrupt, but because of the relationship he has with the president, he's untouchable. Brani Samukai, when I had conversations with him, he mentioned that one of the people that wanted to make sure that we left Liberia because we were interfering with their chupping was Amara Kone. And so this guy's name has been mentioned by Musa Ability, Chris Massaquai, Brani Samukai, and others as being the de facto prime minister because of his relationship with the president. So when you ask why is he so powerful, even though he went to school to study computers, why is he running the finances of our country? Even though he's forcing our poor people who are living on less than $1 a day to pay rent at the tune of $4,333, I think the answer becomes clear because of this poisonous leadership that we have that we as a people have to do away with. If we don't do away with this leadership, examples like Amara Kone will continue to fluster, and there may be additional ones coming forth.
Thank you, my son. Thank you, my brother. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Nice hearing from you. God bless. Always, you know, I love you.
God bless you too. Love you too, my man. Thank you. Take care.
All right.
Thanks for calling, Judge Johnson.
Thank you.
Judge Johnson, do you think that is total press freedom in Liberia?
My brother, I know there isn't total press freedom in Liberia. We've had several examples of that. More recently, Henry Costa, one of the radio show hosts, was ordered to be arrested by the president's son because basically he was exposing and embarrassing the president's son. We all followed the situation of Rodney C.A. that was also ordered to be arrested after he made public some of the audits against the government showing who all was stealing money and so forth and so forth. Very recently, within the last few days, several LU students that we have worked with over now a year and a half in this effort were at night about 3 a.m. in the morning arrested also by this government. Fortunately, different partners on the ground intervened in the situation. We got on the media in Liberia. We had immediate press conferences within hours of these young men being arrested. All those pressure came to bear against the government. They end up releasing those young men within hours simply because of their advocacy and what they have stood for in the media, et cetera. And so even just – and there are other situations as well, but – highlighting those three situations, which are current situations, my answer is a definitive no. There is no press freedom. In fact, I will go further to say There is no freedom in Liberia unless that freedom is in line with the will, the pleasure, the corrupt activities of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and her corruption clique. If your freedom interferes with that, then you no longer have freedom. We thought we were free in Liberia. We should have been free in Liberia. In fact, when it was explained that the president ordered us to be captured, it was also explained those who she had ordered to capture us asked her, charges, what crime did these young people commit that you're saying we should capture them at night? And it was said that she screamed at them and said, I told you just capture them. And so not only is there no press freedom, but there's no freedom for anybody that doesn't stand with this corrupt president and the corruption clique to plunder our nation.
Wow. Wow. This this takes me back to the days before the revolution when, you know, complete authority was, you know, with the president. I mean, he could do as he pleased. Now she's repeating the same thing. When the military and the security apparatus of the country should be a neutral body there to protect and serve the country and its people, how do we get them back to this standard? Because this has been one of the problems, the most serious problem in Liberia, where the military apparatus gets swayed away by the president because he has absolute power, when instead they should be in the protection and service of the country and its people. So how do we get this balance, and then how do we point out, or can we point out these corrupt government officials? How can we shine light on these government officials by names? Is it possible?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the first question, how do we get the balance? Again, one of the blessings, the privilege that Liberia has is that every problem we are facing, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Every problem we are facing as a nation, other nations have faced that problem. What we simply have to do is to study how those other nations addressed the problem and customize the solution for our own environment. One of the ways that nations have addressed the problems of balancing the power in the country is to ensure that there is a middle class. When you have a middle class, that shifts the power away from the president and it places the powers in the hand of the majority of the people in the country. What the president has done systematically along with her corruption clique is to ensure that there is not a middle class. Again, because if there is a middle class, it takes the power out of the hand of a dictator-like president, and it places the power with people. So one of the ways that we go about balancing the power, which other nations have done, and you don't need to be in the U.S. very long to realize that the U.S. is constantly pushing for the middle class, the middle class, the middle class. The reason for that is because it provides for that balance in the power. And can we make that happen? Of course we can. In fact, Almighty God has made it easy for us by giving us rubber and iron ore and oil and palm oil and logging and all these things, that if the right leadership is in place to make the tough decisions, those resources can be used to develop a majority of middle class in Liberia. And then what that does is it shifts the power from one person, and that person's family and close friends have an own power, thereby denying everybody of all their freedoms. But now it places the power in the hand of the people, which is in fact the definition of democracy. That's what democracy is really supposed to be and is really all about.
There's another controversy breeding in Liberia right now about dual citizenship in regards to members of government. Knowing the past conflicts in Liberia and the access members of government had to escape Liberia after they had, you know, led the country into war and whatnot. Are you in favor of dual citizenship or not? with that of government officials in Liberia?
Yeah, that's a good question, my brother. I am in favor of dual citizenship. Let me say this. The people who, at times when it is convenient for them to speak against dual citizenship, most of those people, my brother, I will say boldly, are cowards and they're hypocrites. The reason I say they are cowards and they're hypocrites is this. The president's son, Robert Sirleaf, who everybody knows is a U.S. citizen. In fact, his entire U.S. passport, every page from front to cover, was published in the newspaper. At the time it was published in the newspaper, he was heading NorCal. He was squandering all the oil money. He was crossing all the oil bills. Not a single person who is so-called anti-citizenship raised a voice. Not a single person stood up to the president and her son. Nobody marched. Nobody rallied. Nobody said a thing. What he felt he could take, when the deals were done, the contracts were signed, the monies were pocketed, then he's resigned, and now he's talking about running for senator of Monserrato County. Still, nobody has said anything to him or the president about dual citizenship. There are many others in government that we are clearly aware of that have had citizenships from the very beginning and have done nothing about that. The reason I'm in favor of dual citizenship is because the people that acquired dual citizenship, many of those people, the majority of those people, fled Liberia because of the war. They fled at no choice to them. They sought refuge in other countries. Most of these countries, in fact, all of these countries, will only confer certain benefits on you if you are a citizen that would allow you to further yourself in terms of education, employment. Therefore, you can assist your other family members who were stuck in the war. And so because of that choice of, do we allow our people to die after the war, or do we acquire citizenships to get opportunities to support them, of course we chose the survival and the prosperity of our people. So for these cowards and hypocrites to now turn around and try to use that as though it is something negative, to try to say those who fled the war that went to Ivory Coast and became citizens there so that you could get more opportunity to feed your people in Liberia, you went to the U.S. and all these other places, you are somehow less of a Liberian now, you're somehow less patriotic, you don't deserve that. I think it's cowardly and I think it's hypocritical. If those people were really concerned about dual citizenship, when the president dared all of and put her son, who was a known U.S. citizen, in the highest position in the country, they would have been man enough, they would have been woman enough to say something. But as the record reflects, we didn't have a single man or woman with enough guts to stand up to the president and her son.
If there was a majority vote in Liberia against dual citizenship for members of the Liberian government, would you be in favor of it?
I would be in favor of dual citizenship across the board. Part of the reason, and you touched on this earlier, those who are trying to confuse our people are giving the false impression that people with citizenship can come to Liberia, do illegal things, misbehave, and so-called run away. That is a lie from the pit of hell. There is no country under the sun that Liberians reside that have acquired citizenship as a consequence of the war that accepts criminals that will encourage people to become criminals in Liberia and run to that country, and that country provides a safe haven. What has happened is that this president, trying to avoid being exposed for corruption, when she's targeted Liberians who fled, that exposed her and fled, and she targeted those people to cover up the corruption, and she had no evidence against those people. Now, the countries that she's asked for those people to be extradited from, of course, the countries want to have some idea of what evidences you have against these people. Of course, if there is no evidence, they're not just going to send these people to get killed, especially when your own judge in the country who was on the case, who has now been removed from the case, but before he was removed, said there is no evidence. And so the point of dual citizenship, people who are trying to mislead our people are given the false impression that one of the reasons we have to not allow dual citizenship is because these people will steal from you and they will be able to run away and hide. That is simply not true. In fact, the real thieves, some of them have dual citizenship, but they have not fled. They have not gone anywhere. They are still in Liberia and being headed by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
We thank you very much, Judge Johnson, for being here live with us today, and we hope to have you back next Saturday, if you would please. Can you commit
my
to
brother,
next Saturday? Because we have a whole lot more to discuss with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me again give honor to God, my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, for the strength and the provision to continue to do this. We have been doing this now, fighting for the cause of our people in this specific context since 2012, and he continues to do amazing things every day. And so let me use this public forum to honor him and say thank you, Papa. My brother, to you and your staff, let me also use this public manner to say thank you. You are also doing your part by creating a means by which there can be dialogue and information dissemination for Mama Liberia. Let me also thank your listening audience called in and those that were not able or did not call in. You're also participating by listening and gaining information, because inevitably, these informations you are gaining, you will continue to share with other Liberians, thereby bringing about enlightenment and awareness. And so, again, praise be to God. Thank you, my brother. Thank you to the listening audience. I will commit to every Saturday when we have a forum, my brother, and advertise it, get the listening audience there. We want to hear from people that support, if there are still people that support this corrupt government. When I come on, we want to hear from them publicly. We want to know why they support the government so that Liberians will know the truth. Again, thank you, my brother. May God continue to bless you and yours until we talk again.
Thank you, Judge Johnson. We do appreciate it. May God be with you and your family and Ms. Cochran also, and in your endeavorment towards the prosperity of Liberia. This is Bismarck right here at Radio Talk 101.3. We look forward to seeing you next Saturday on another interview, a discussion with Judge Johnson and Ms. Cochran concerning the Cochran file. Hey, do tune in, same time, same station. It's Bismarck Radio Talk 101.3. We love you. Have a blessed Sunday. Hey, Jesus loves you. Share the love around. This is Bismarck. Have a blessed one. Peace.
A blood fire there. A large man. You're a fial. A lord here,
David. You're like a star. You be from afar. That's just what you are. C'est quelque chose que tu dois savoir.
Understand.
Like a guitar fit for a czar. Like a burning cigar. Tu es tout en ta maman et moi.
Yeah, we out of here, so have a blessed Saturday, and we'll see, have a blessed Sunday, we'll see you next Sunday, I'm sorry if I said Saturday, it's Sunday, we're going to be doing this every Sunday with Judge Johnson and Ms. Cochran, exposing corruption in Liberia, so do tune in, same time, same station on Sunday, we love you, have a blessed one, peace. Johnson on next Saturday too, between 10 in the morning till 12, so make sure you tune in to Radio Talk 101.3. See you next Sunday for the same program. Let's Talk, Exposing Corruption in Liberia. This is Bismarck right here on Radio Talk 101.3.
If you feel the groove, move it, do it.